Today's episode is brought to you by Stage Door Manor. Stage Door Manor is currently accepting applications for their summer theater programs. You can find information and application forms at stagedoormanor.com. This episode is also sponsored by ContemporaryMusicalTheater.com. Don't you hate it when someone sings your audition song? I mean, don't they know it's yours? Find great songs no one's heard, but every audition pianist can play at ContemporaryMusicalTheater.com, and that's theater with an R-E. Theater People podcast listeners can use the code TPPL for 10% off an annual subscription. So don't sing just any song, sing something new.
Hello.
Welcome to the Theater People podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Hines. You guys, I'm so excited that we finally got to sit down with today's guest, Tony nominee Rory O'Malley, to chat about, like, everything. Rory made his Broadway debut in 2005 in the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. He went on to originate the role of Elder McKinley in the smash hit musical The Book of Mormon in 2011, for which he earned his first Tony nomination. And he was most recently seen on Broadway as King George in a little show called Hamilton, a role he's now doing on the first national tour. He's worked off-Broadway and on TV. He even has his own podcast. He's basically the king of all media. I just loved talking to him. Here's our conversation.
My name is Elder Smith, and can I leave this book with you?
Hi, Rory O'Malley.
Hi.
Welcome to the Theater People podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We were just talking about how you were originally going to be like our third guest.
I know.
And then you got like a big fancy TV job.
I missed my shot to be number three.
Yeah, you blew it big time.
I really did. I should have turned down the TV show.
I was a little surprised, but you know what? Everyone's on their own path.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it didn't matter that I got to pay for my wedding. I could have been number three, and that would have been more memorable.
Exactly.
Than a wedding.
You know, listen, I'll let you say it.
Okay.
Can I say one word to you?
Yeah.
Nerds. Okay, here's
the
thing.
I wonder, are we going to talk a lot of nerds today?
Well, I'm obsessed. I was really obsessed with that whole situation.
Sure.
And I remember thinking about how, I was like, who do I know who can get me in that room for that one performance that you guys did?
Right.
Because it was such a big deal.
Yeah.
Will you tell the people a little bit about what happened? I think what's cool about it for me is that the fact that it didn't work set you up for such a great job.
Yeah, it has to be the craziest story of my career, because I don't think I could take a crazier story than this.
Like, yeah.
Even though it is such a wonderful ending, like the whiplash that I received from a year ago this week, actually, or I think it was January 20th of 2016. I was sitting in a Starbucks with Josh Gad, my buddy from Mormon in college, and we were in Los Angeles, and I was actually talking to him about like writing a new show, which I ended up doing at 54 Below.
Yeah, I want to talk about it.
And I get an email saying, hey, you got this offer to do a Broadway show called Nerds.
Just an offer.
An email. Like, it didn't feel real. Like, I honestly thought, oh, there's some kind of mistake here. because, you know, I've been offered things before, but certainly not leads in Broadway shows via email.
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually there's a call or something.
Was it from, like, your agent?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, like, out of the blue. What you have to do is give your bank account and
$500,000. Yeah, a prince in
Nairobi.
Yeah,
exactly.
Nairobi prince.
But congratulations.
Thank you. Well, it was wonderful getting that email, and I was like, I don't think it's real. And then I looked into it. Yeah, it's real. I didn't even know it was happening, you know, because it just happened so quickly. I think that the Longacre, after Allegiance closed, was open, and people were pouncing to make something happen, to put something in there, and they moved really quickly. They put out offers, and I had heard of the show, and Casey Hushin, who was the director and who had worked on it before, she had talked to me about it previously in different incarnations, but I hadn't seen it. I didn't know the material. I just was like, oh, she's great. And then when I got the material, when I got the offer, I was like laughing out loud, reading through it, listening to the music. There was a lot of rap for me.
Oh,
which
wow.
Was a wonderful.
Wow.
Well, yeah. No, it was the music was like, it was great. It is great. And I hope that it is done. It really deserves to be to have a run in New York, you know, whether it's Broadway or off-Broadway or some incarnation. But yeah, there's rapping, there's so much comedy. And I realized I can really sink my teeth into this and just have a blast. And so I showed up February 20th. Yes, I remember dates.
Well, good for you.
February 20th in New York. And we had 3 weeks of rehearsal. And in the third week after we finished staging the entire thing, we were doing the curtain call. Our, like, mega mix, if you will. And we were singing, Live Your Dreams. And the lead producer walked in and said, everyone has to go home. One of the investors dropped out of our show. Nerds will not be opening on Broadway this season. And, of course, it was sad for me. And I was very upset. Like, it didn't seem real. But for the writers who worked on it for 10 years, for our director who is so wonderful and brilliant, it was going to be her Broadway debut as a director. She's been associate on a number of wonderful shows. For the actors whose Broadway debuts it was going to be, it sounds to somebody who doesn't know how hard it is to get on Broadway and how hard it is to have your Broadway debut. This sounds dramatic to say that it felt like someone died.
Yeah.
But I don't know any other way to describe what that day was, because it was calling home to tell people. It was consoling each other. It was people bringing in alcohol and things to eat. And we were told that we should just go home, but nobody did. We just stayed to wrap our heads around what had just happened. And that's when Casey, our wonderful director, said, you know, we owe it to ourselves to come back tomorrow and run the show from beginning to end, even though we'd never done that, and just maybe show some friends what we've created in this room for the last 3 weeks.
Oh, my God. How was that run?
It was lots of tears and lots of laughter. It was the smartest thing Casey could have done, because if we didn't have that closure, if we didn't have that moment of respecting the work that we did on it, not just for us but for the designers, you know,
set.
I was living across the street from the Longacre, and I watched the set be loaded into the theater. They were unbelievable because they had worked on it for years,
right? And
it had been around, and they. The passion that they had at the design presentation was amazing, you know, and that was the only time I met them. So
Wow. It
was kind of like, wow, this is going to be an amazing spectacle. And it really was, like, with all of the tech, you know, because it was a tech show about technical advances.
Oh, right, of course, yeah.
I mean, there was going to be a lot of really cool stuff. So anyway, it was a way for all of us to get into the room and kind of mourn what we lost. And I went home. I flew back to Los Angeles, where my husband was, where he's a normal person and with an office job. And he surprised me with Bruce Springsteen tickets.
Oh.
I saw Bruce Springsteen, you know, and he took me to a SoulCycle class. And he said, no one has ever been more angry at a SoulCycle class than you today. I remember the instructor was like, you know, let's just bike today and meet at the corner of curiosity and courage. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to meet you on a corner, buddy. And
SoulCycle, get it together, you guys.
They were doing their job. They
were
living their life and being happy, and I just was having none of it. And that was like the day after I got back. And then the next day I'm sitting on my couch, and I got a call from my agent. And she said, Rory, I know that you just went through a really tough experience, but would you consider going back to Broadway? And I said, oh, I don't know. My heart is just so broken after that experience. And she said, well, what if it's for The King in Hamilton? And I said, I'm at LAX. I'm on the red eye. She said, you want to speak to your husband? I said, no.
Nope.
He'll understand. I'll text him when I get there. It was...
When Lin-Manuel Miranda calls, you just go.
No, luckily, I went to college with Leslie Odom Jr., mm-hmm. So I scored tickets at the Public.
Wow.
And was able to see what that show was. I don't know, it must have been the third week or something, third or fourth week. I knew it was the greatest thing written in my lifetime, and I knew that what the king was, and so I saw Brian D'Arcy James play it. And so what the crazy part of this story is that Bethany Knox, the casting director from Telsey, who cast Nerds, casts Hamilton. And she was in that room for the run-through that we did, and she thought, oh, Rory can do the king.
Oh my God.
He's free now. She knew I was free. She knew that I was around. And yeah, so it's the craziest story.
What was the next step? Did you have to meet? I read that you met with Tommy and Alex. Is that right?
Yeah. So I basically, my agent said, like, they're giving you an offer. I was like, I'll do whatever you need, you know, they want me to do, because I thought, if it's not now, like, one day I want to play this, so yeah. You know, whatever, you know, they want. So they said, yeah, here's the offer. This is what it's going to be. We just want you to meet with Tommy and Alex first, you know, and so everything will be, they know you. And so I was like, great, but I'm an actor, so I know that nothing is certain. I just had a Broadway show crumble during rehearsal. So, of course, you know, they're like, oh, you know, it's a technicality going in to meet with these guys. And I saw the show. I went back to Leslie's dressing room, and I told him, like, they gave me this offer. I'm going to meet with them tomorrow. And he flipped out. He was so excited. And I was like, don't get excited. Nothing's for sure in this business. So I went to the work session with Alex and Tommy Cale, the director. And we just talked. I mean, I sang through the songs. We talked. We talked about the character. And they were just like, yeah, it's going to be so fun working with you. And we're really excited. And I was like, oh, okay. So is this again? Like, can we put this in
writing? Did you ask him, like, to his face?
No. I walked out. Writing, yeah. Please? I was like, I walked out. And Bethany Knox, who was also in the room, who, you know, clearly made my 2016 something really amazing, and 2017. She was like, I'm so glad it's going to work out, you know. And, you know, it was a special moment for both of us, because she had just gone through that too, you know. She cast all those people in that show, and she was devastated. Casting directors want good things for actors, especially the ones that they put in shows. And I think that was really heartbreaking for her. And it was wonderful to just days later be in the opposite situation.
Oh, I was just thinking about how you were saying after the Nerds thing happened, that, like, mm-hmm. you were saying, if you're in this business long enough, you know that when something bad happens, it's usually because something good is going to happen.
Sure.
Do you believe that?
Well, I have to. I mean, you have to believe that everything happens for a reason. One, because it does. Like, it does.
Agreed, 100%.
Like, you can be upset. You can have, in a bad day, you can be like, no, that's not true. Everything's horrible. Okay, you're having a bad day. Mm-hmm. But at the end of that day, the next day, you need to remember that everything happens for a reason. We're all on a path, and it's, you know, it's what's going to happen, because it did.
Exactly.
So you have to accept it. And I think that my Nerds to Hamilton story is amazing. I also think it's not a great story to tell people, because the amount of time in between, 2 days, that's not normal.
Unusual, yeah.
That's not normal. And, you know, when I've said in my past, like, oh, I didn't book that job that I desperately, desperately wanted so I could get this one, there's usually like a year and a half to 2 years in between. You know, you realize that getting work, it really alters the course of your life. It'll take you to a new city. It'll take you to a different situation. It'll pull you out of the running for a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, don't be too devastated when that regional theater job doesn't come through, because there might be a Broadway show. There might be something else, you know. And there might be a restaurant job that comes through where you meet the person who you're going to collaborate on writing something for the rest of your life.
Totally.
You cannot be too devastated by which way your career turns, because you don't know where it's taking you. You have to just enjoy the ride as much as possible.
What was your process with Hamilton? You saw the show a whole bunch of times, and then yeah. how much rehearsal time did you get before you were put in?
2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And I watched the show every day.
Are you like the one person in the world times. Who's sick of watching Hamilton?
No, no. Well, the thing was is that I knew that as soon as I went into the show, I wasn't going to get to watch it again. And right. that's true. I have not seen Hamilton since I was going into the show. And it sucks to be so close, and yet I can't see it. I can hear it. And my monitor is always turned up real high.
Yeah.
But it was crazy. It was such a fast thing. It's not like I knew the King songs. I listened to them, but I wasn't like rehearsing for months, ready for the opportunity to come along, or you know, it was like a deep dive,
yeah.
really quickly. So I got to New York March 28th. Now I'm telling you these dates just because
it
happened
that you know
so
it.
Quickly. And, you know, from January 20th of getting the email about Nerds, February 20th going there, March 9th was when Nerds was imploded. And by March 28th,
You were back.
I was back in New York.
Wow.
In the Richard Rogers. And so I watched it every show. I tried to get to know the cast as much as possible because I was the first replacement going into the show. And I knew it was sensitive. It was like...
So you were the first replacement to go into the show.
Yes.
Wow. So you got to do the show with Lynn.
Yeah, for 4 months.
Oh my. So how was that? How was that to come into that?
Scary. Probably one of the scariest things I've ever done. Because that's the other thing is that it didn't make sense because Jonathan was leaving before the Tonys. You know, I was playing the King when he was nominated. So it was such a crazy time
yeah.
to be there. Yeah, it was overwhelming, and it was also absolutely thrilling. And I cannot believe that I got to be in the room where it happens while, you know, Lynn won the Pulitzer, while you know, the show was nominated for all the Tonys, got to go to the Tony Awards, got to be a part of theatrical history. Yeah. And, you know, I just kept being like, how did this happen? How am I here right now? But I was really grateful, and I still constantly walk around to the rest of the cast saying, I swear I worked hard in my life. as I have my 9.5 minutes as Jonathan timed out, you know.
What do you do when you're off stage? Does everybody ask you that?
Yes. That is the number one question. So I try to come up with good answers for what I do. Because I know when I'm backstage by myself, I think someone's going to ask me about this. I better get off Twitter. I better stop playing Candy Crush because this isn't going to be a good answer.
Stay in character the whole time.
Oh, the whole time.
You're in character.
Yeah, I'm total method. you know, I kind of have a routine now. Before I come out, it's just getting ready, warming up. And so while they're singing my shot, I'm finishing up my vocal warm up. Then I go do my number. And then I have about a 45-minute break until the end of the act when I come out again. Usually that's a time where I'll either, you know, respond to emails that I have, you know, pay the bill that I need to pay.
Yeah.
Call mom, do something constructive that I've been putting off. And then after that, the second entrance, that's intermission. So everybody's off stage and they can talk to me.
Right.
So it's my favorite part of the show because usually I'm all by myself. Then I go on stage and everybody runs off stage and I'm by myself all again. And so intermission is a lot of fun. We have a lot of little traditions and just getting to know the cast and be with, the crew and the cast and wardrobe is so much fun. And then I have, the beginning of act two, which is, a pretty hearty break, another like 45 minutes. And what I did this year was write my show for 54 Below,
yes.
which was, you know, I did about 5 songs and the rest was all written material. Some stand up and some other crazy stories from my childhood. Very embarrassing things. So, you know, I started a podcast. So
yes, we're going to talk about that too.
Yes. And so putting that together, trying to make that break about being really constructive artistically. And then I have, you know, friends come and visit me from wardrobe and people. Yeah. I host in my dressing room.
I have three more Hamilton questions and we'll move on. Number one, what was it like to be there for the Mike Pence thing?
It was overwhelming. I knew that it was going to be emotional because it was only 9 days, I think, after the election, 9 or 10. So the emotions were raw in the audience, and they were vocalizing those emotions, not just at the beginning, but throughout the entire thing. And
throughout the show, mm-hmm. Was he being heckled?
No, he was not being heckled. It's just that the day after the election, it was very emotional too, but it's a show about elections. It's a show about America. So yeah, everyone, and it's not really, it truly isn't just like, one side or the other. People just get emotional with the show and they're always kind of yelling out at different parts of it. But yeah, I think that there's a lot of anxiety right now, and the anxiety was being vocalized throughout different parts of the show and throughout some of my stuff. You know, my second entrance, What Comes Next, You've Been Freed, Do You Know How Hard It Is to Lead, You're On Your Own, Awesome Wow, Do You Have a Clue What Happens Now, Oceans Rise, Empires Fall, It's Much Harder When It's All Your Call. I only say that whole thing because just think about what it's like to be in a room 8 days after an election, the most divisive election in our lifetimes, and to have those words be sung. So, yeah, there's a lot of, I wouldn't say heckles or boos. I would say moans.
Yeah.
And I was very proud of Brandon and our cast for trying to put some kind of positive and words to those moans and to the reaction, that there is an anxiety, that there is a fear, and we do have hope that this show can make everyone remember what America is about, and that we are a nation of immigrants, of people who've had to come together from different walks of life and different sides of the aisle, different kinds of thinking. We've had to come together and be united and be a nation. And I think that we need to remember that now more than ever.
Yeah. Why is now the right time for you to go on tour?
Well, I really want to see my husband again.
That's my final question. So much fun. How do you manage a marriage when you are such a fantastic, popular working actor?
Oh.
And you guys are away from each other a lot.
Well, you know, thank you for calling me a popular working actor.
You are a popular working actor.
I worked for about 10 weeks in 2015. And those were a great 10 weeks. But I think that it's important for people to realize that even when things are going really well, there's a lot of downtime, there's a lot of searching, there's a lot of trying to figure it out. And Gerald, my husband, who is a normal, who is a civilian, he could not be more supportive. Like, it's really him. You know, like, he's the reason that, you know, I would never be with an actor.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
My God, we're insane. But he has really, really been so supportive of everything I've done. I look to him to advise me, to tell me what he thinks I should do, because he also loves Broadway and theater and movies even more than I do. He sees everything. And so there's just a lot of trust between us. And, you know, I wouldn't do anything that would keep us apart like this if it wasn't something that we both didn't believe in. So we believe in Hamilton as a show, not just as a job.
Yeah.
And I think that was the universe getting me in to see it at the Public with Gerald, that's probably what's gotten us through this year. It's just the fact that we knew how special it was. So why am I going on tour with it? One, I will be playing the king as long as I physically can, which, let's face it, I think maybe I take 30 steps in the show. You know, I love doing this job. I will do it as long as I possibly can, but it became clear that, like, as much as I love this job, that being away from my husband, and he has this wonderful job in Los Angeles, it just wasn't going to work. So I pretty much immediately started talking to them saying, hey, I know you're going to California. I would love to be a part of that. So the first leg of the tour is 5 months in San Francisco, 5 months in Los Angeles.
Ah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, you know, after that, we'll see. And it's been such an exciting adventure. I'm so excited to take 10 months to be in California and to get to bring the show there. I mean, I lived in Los Angeles right out of Carnegie Mellon, and I got my Equity card in LA. So it's a theater town to me. It's a town that has wonderful, wonderful theater. And, you know, I got my start working at Gary Marshall's Falcon Theater, right, which will now, now that we've lost our wonderful friend Gary this year, but it's going to be renamed the Gary Marshall Theater.
Wow.
In Toluca Lake, the Burbank area of Los Angeles. And, you know, that's like where I first put my feet down after graduating from college. I worked at the Irish Pub across the street, Timmy Nolan's, and I played Richie Cunningham in Happy Days the Musical for Gary Marshall and the Troubadour Theater Company. So I'm just so thrilled to get to be doing a show like Hamilton. I really wanted to do Book of Mormon there. It just didn't work out, and I was doing, you know, we were both here in New York. It made sense to be stay here, but to get to bring Hamilton to Los Angeles is really going to mean a lot to me. And I have a lot of family there too, so.
And now, a few words from our sponsors. Do you wake up humming Hamilton and singing Sondheim? Do you dream of a place where there are Shakespeare flash mobs, Happy Birthday is sung in harmony, and surprise Broadway guests fill your world? At Stage Door Manor, kids from every state and 6 continents spend their summer totally immersed in the magic of theater. I'm sure almost all of you know that Stage Door Manor is the inspiration for Todd Graff's movie Camp and Mickey Rapkin's book Theater Geek. But did you know that you've seen plenty of their alums on stage, screen, and behind the scenes? Natalie Portman, Mandy Moore, Zach Braff, Robert Downey Jr., Sean Levy, and Janine Tesori all spent their summers in the Catskill Mountains of New York. Stage Door Manor produces an unbelievable 42 full-scale shows in 8 on-campus theaters, and there are more than 100 classes at beginning and advanced levels, everything from playwriting to stage combat. If it's theater-related, they do it. Stage Door premieres include original stage versions of Rent, Avenue Q, Andrew Lippa's Wild Party, Woman in White, and High School Musical. Stage Door welcomes kids ages 10 to 18, and there are no auditions for admission. They accept all levels of experience and talent and find roles for students in shows where everyone can have his or her moment in the spotlight. Worth Magazine named Stage Door among the top 10 summer programs in the world, and it's been called the Hollywood High of summer camps by Playbill. No wonder sessions fill up quickly. Spots are almost gone for the summer, so hurry and go online to StageDoorManor.com for more info. Also, you guys, we're so honored to be sponsored by ContemporaryMusicalTheater.com. I love what they do. Looking for that perfect song for summer stock auditions? Check out ContemporaryMusicalTheater.com. They're the largest online database of contemporary musical theater writers and songs. You'll find over 180 composers and lyricists and 550 songs, searchable by voice and song type. They have a whole range of contemporary musical styles, from songs that sound like they're from the Golden Age to pop rock musical theater. Auditioning for a season that includes Guys and Dolls, Avenue Q, and Spring Awakening, they've got you covered. Listen, purchase, and download great unpublished songs no one else is singing. And check out their blog for suggestions on awesome songs that will help you stand out from the hundreds of other performers up for the same roles. They also have cool articles about how to give a great audition. Visit ContemporaryMusicalTheater.com, and that's theater with an R-E, and use the code TPPL for 10% off an annual subscription. Are you a teacher? They now have institutional subscriptions available. So don't sing just any song, sing something new. So let's go back. I want to talk a little bit about your show, because I feel like it tells us about your childhood.
Sure.
You have this really interesting childhood.
Yeah.
Tell us everything.
Everything. Well, basically, I grew up with a single mom who worked as an accountant. She bartended at an Irish pub. I grew up in Irish pubs, which was kind of what my first show that I did at Joe's Pub Crawl was a lot about. But I also, you know, being a chubby gay kid in Cleveland, Ohio, where, you know, football and sports were the biggest deal.
Yeah.
And I did play football. But I would kind of escape to my basement and perform entire Broadway musicals by myself, for myself. And so I would take on all the characters, and I do Belle from Beauty and the Beast. people are like, wow, how long have you been rehearsing that? I did this at 54 Below, and I was like, about 20 years, at least. But, you know, it was my fantasy world. It was my safe space, you know. It was the place where I could go put on records and CDs and pretend like I was on Broadway. You know, it was where my dream was kind of cultivated and created in the early stages. And, you know, before I had theater nerd friends, before I found them, all I had was my basement. And luckily, after I got enrolled at Beck Center in Lakewood, Ohio, their children's theater, I started meeting friends who wanted to play in my basement and be in the musicals.
Oh,
and
that's the best.
You know, and then I would have cast parties in this basement. So I did this whole show based around my experiences in my basement in Ohio, and that I had created my own world there, and that I was able to meet theater friends. So I just did a bunch of numbers from my childhood.
I love it.
In Broadway's basement, 54 Below.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Yeah, it's just me and you.
No one's going to hear this.
Right.
How old were you when you came out?
19.
And how did that go?
Oh my God, it was great. So easy.
Really?
No. I think I told my mother that I was worried that I was gay when I was in fifth grade. And she was very calm, respectful, and, you know, kind of, and I don't know how I would deal with that, mm-hmm. with a kid and even being gay. she dealt with it very well, but I realized, you know, like, backtrack, like, I don't know what I was thinking.
Just kidding, Mom.
Just kidding. So, you know, and I was raised Catholic, and I gave it a shot. I tried to turn it off. I really did. You know, I tried to pray the gay away.
Oh,
I tried
God.
to do what I could, you know, not by having any help doing it. I just was torturing myself.
Uh-huh. As we are wont to do in our youth.
Absolutely. And so then I went to Carnegie Mellon and saw all of these young, gay, brave, courageous, and just happy young men. And I thought, you know, I don't have to live like this anymore. And that summer I kissed a boy for the first time and immediately got Bell's palsy, which is when half of your face freezes.
That's a serious thing.
It's very serious, especially for an actor after your first year of acting school. You can't use your face.
Right.
But I was sure it was God punishing me for being gay.
It's not a contagious thing, right?
No.
It's like it's brought on by like stress.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kind of like stress of coming out.
Of course.
So yeah, that's how well my coming out came.
Oh
went.
My.
But yeah, no, it was a crazy experience, and I was clearly insanely stressed out about it. But once I did tell my mom and friends and slowly the world, which, you know, every day you're coming out. There's somebody who's listening to this who didn't know Rory O'Malley was gay. I mean, there's like one person. But, you know, like there will be. Like I will post a picture of Gerald and I on Instagram, and in the comments someone will say, Rory's gay? Like, my God. I had it super easy because even with Mormon, you know, I started a gay rights group or marriage equality group. Yeah, and people didn't even, when I started that, like, people who we were working with didn't even know I was an actor. You know, it was like so early on in my career. And so it wasn't like there was this period of time where it was in question. You know what I mean? Like, I went into Book of Mormon and I was playing Elder McKinley singing Turn It Off. It was, you know, it made the entire coming out process really easy for me just because there was no escaping who I was. And, you know, it's something that I've embraced fully. And are there parts that I probably haven't been seen for because I'm a gay actor? Absolutely.
You think?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. There are parts that I'm seen for that I'm not right for just because I'm gay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a lot of things that you can complain about in this business for things that you're seen for and things you're not seen for, whether you're gay or not, where women have, so many different things that they have to go through. So there's always something in this business.
Let's talk about Mormon real quick, because there's a couple more things I want to talk about, but it'd be crazy if we didn't talk about Book of Mormon.
Sure.
When I was in fifth grade, I had a friend, Steve Blade. He and I were close as two friends could be. One thing led to another, and soon I would discover I was having really strange feelings for Steve.
How old were you when you got that job?
So the first reading, the first time it was read out loud, I was probably 25 or 26. I think 26.
Mm-hmm. And were you with it from the first, reading?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. And did you audition or were you just asked to do it?
No, I was just asked to do it because they didn't want to hold auditions because it was so top secret. And it was Carrie Gardner over at, I guess she was just working independently for that project. And I've asked her this many years later, why did you call me? I was working at BlackRock Financial, my temp job, human resources, and I got a call from an agent saying, Carrie Gardner wants you to do this reading. The guys from South Park did it. And I knew what it was because my cousin, who's a realtor in Utah, found on a blog that the South Park guys were writing a Mormon musical. And when I was driving from Los Angeles, moving to New York, I stopped in Utah, stayed at his house one night, and he handed me this piece of paper and he said, you have to be in this musical. It's a new one.
I'm
totally serious. He said, it's about Mormons, and the South Park guys wrote it with Bobby Lopez, who did Avenue Q. And I literally was like, Danny, he's my godfather and a realtor in Utah. I said, that's not how the business works. You don't get through the Lincoln Tunnel and say, all right, I'm here for my show. This is the one I'd like. Thank you. Well, literally a year later, I'm sitting at BlackRock Financial and my agent calls and says, the South Park guys are doing a top secret musical. And I was like, it's about Mormons. And she said, what? It's about Mormons. My cousin Danny told me. She was like, my cousin Danny, a realtor in Utah.
That is insane.
I know. And we always joke, he wants a cut.
Yeah, of course. Wait, can I ask you about that?
What?
Well, we can cut this out if you don't want to talk about it.
What?
But you guys all get a cut, right?
Oh, you mean we get what the union, it's like the union standard. It's just that sometimes the union standard is, they work around it.
What does that mean?
That means that they'll do a show in off-Broadway. It's a contract, so a workshop contract.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
I thought the popular rumor was that Trey Parker and Matt Stone were like, we have so much money, we don't need this much. Let's give some to the original cast.
Oh.
Is that not what happened?
I never heard that one. the union should get credit for what the union
for
is.
Sure.
And the union has a contract called a workshop contract. And the workshop contract is that I don't know the exact language or numbers, but when you work on a workshop contract for the 6 weeks for minimal pay, and you do the performances for an invited audience, then you are entitled to the royalties of 1% split between the entire cast.
Does that mean even if you don't go to Broadway with the production?
That is true.
So somebody who was in the workshop who didn't go to Broadway still gets a percentage.
Absolutely. And those are the people who and those are the people I'm most grateful, because some of them put years of their life investing into it, and they see checks on a monthly basis.
So it's not the original cast. It's the original workshop cast.
Correct.
Rory O'Malley, you've set me straight.
Good.
That's really interesting.
It's
good information.
There's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of people thinking that it's not what already exists. It does exist. What happens is that there's different contracts or different ways to go around using the contract that was negotiated with a lab. So when they say lab and why they're like, oh, lab, that's because
they don't want to do a workshop.
They don't want to do a workshop. And when they go out of town, or when they do something at an off-Broadway theater, they don't have to do that as well. I'm not an expert by any means.
There's no elephant in this room.
No.
There's no elephant in this room.
No, but I think that the union just needs to be strengthened, or people need to realize that this is already, it already exists.
People, I swear to you, people do not know that.
Yeah, I don't think they do. And also, like, look, is it money that is going to change lives? Well, yeah, it is, actually, because I would say that it can add up, you know, from different productions. And
Right.
And also, like, it takes very little to change an actor's life.
Totally.
It takes very little to say, oh, here is money for groceries this month. That's life-changing.
Yeah.
Is for an actor to be able to feel like, okay, maybe I didn't book this job, but I know that because I worked, invested my time and energy into something previously, that I'm going to keep investing into this business, this profession.
Totally.
And, you know, they it may have been part of the contract, but at Mormon, there was never any kind of question it was just what it was. And I think they're very happy with it, because we felt like it was our show.
Yeah.
And nobody left our company for almost 2 years.
Wow.
I mean, Nikki was there 3. I was there 2. Josh and Andrew stayed for 1 year and 7 months.
Wow.
So that's that. You know, and there are people who are still in the ensemble who are still there 6 years in. So we take that show very personally. And
were they in that original workshop with you?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You got nominated for a Tony Award for your first, like, originating a role on Broadway, your second Broadway show.
Yes, I lost a Tony Award on Broadway. Every time I walk into a room in my house, Gerald goes, my husband says, one time Tony loser, Rory O'Malley, everyone.
Wait, who won that year?
John Larroquette for How to Succeed in Business.
Meh.
He was wonderful.
I'm just kidding. I love John Larroquette. How was it to get nominated for a Tony Award?
It was crazy.
I can't even imagine.
You know what? It's just so surreal. And it was awesome in every way. And then you go to the Tonys and you're like, this can't be the real Tonys.
Right.
Like, this has got to be like a set of the Tonys.
The phonies.
You know? Yeah. The phonies.
I just made that up.
You did. You're so smart. But yeah, you just feel like an imposter a little bit.
Of course.
And, you know, so as we can always feel in this business, anytime we don't, like, you know, set ourselves straight and be like, no, you are supposed to be here.
You deserve to be
whether
here.
Whether that's in a rehearsal room or at the Tonys. Yeah. Like, but it was beautiful in every way. And to get to go through that process with Andrew, Josh, and Nikki, the entire show, it was beautiful, you know. And we have the luncheon, the luncheon for all the nominees. And we get this, like, plaque saying that we were nominated for a Tony. And now that's in my childhood bedroom.
Yes.
In Cleveland. And
that's a good place for it.
Yeah.
That's a great place for it.
It, yeah.
Rory O'Malley, thank you for doing this.
Thank
I'm glad
you.
We waited. I'm glad
yeah.
We waited. It was 3 years ago, but I feel like
everything
so much
happens
has happened
for a reason.
Exactly.
Just like we started.
Exactly. Well, have a great time on your tour, and
thank you so
I'm
much.
Happy to know you, and we'll see you again soon.
See you soon.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Gone.
Good for you.
My hetero side just won.
Theater People is a product of Theater Podcast Productions and is produced by Mike Jensen and me, Patrick Hines. Thanks again to this week's sponsors, Stage Door Manor. They are currently accepting applications for their summer acting programs. You can check them out at stagedoormanor.com and contemporarymusicaltheater.com. Is your audition book growing mold? Join contemporarymusicaltheater.com and remember what it was like to enjoy singing. Use the code TPPL for 10% off an annual subscription. Special thanks to our Patreon associate producers, Robbie Rosell, Ty Williams, and Cynthia Wallach, and to Steve Tipton, Eric Emsch, Keith Allen Herzog, Ellen Marsh, and the staff at Oswald's. We'll be back next week. Until then, tell your friends about us. Let's get the theater community talking.
How do you feel?
The same.
Then you've only got yourself to blame. You didn't pretend hard enough. Imagine that your brain is made of tiny boxes. Then find the box that's gay and crush it! Okay?
No, no, I'm not having gay thoughts.
All right! It worked!
Yeah!